Welcome to Passing the Plate, the podcast that's all about food, traditions, and the wonderful connections they create. I'm Lisa Lisson, the genealogist and family history expert behind Are You My Cousin?
And I'm Ashley Covelli, the food writer and recipe developer behind Big Flavors from a Tiny Kitchen. We'll be your guides on this flavor-packed adventure. We're not just talking about recipes. We're diving into family history, exploring new cultures, and preserving favorite recipes for future generations. In short, we're celebrating the stories and tastes that come with every bite.
So grab a seat at the table and let's embark on a journey of flavor, tradition, and connection. This is Passing the Plate, where every episode is a feast for the senses and a celebration of the ties that nourish our souls. In this episode, we are exploring old cookbooks. Many of us have an old copy of a favorite cookbook or an old church cookbook that had been passed down to us. Let's take a close-up look at what we can discover in those cookbooks.
Lisa, whenever I think of old family recipes, I immediately think back to a few things. Recipe boxes filled with index cards and handwritten recipes. I have several of those from my grandma. Cookbooks that my family used when I was growing up, things like Betty Crocker or Joy of Cooking, like those real classic kind of cookbooks come to mind. And then the really big one that I think of is printed cookbook collections from like churches or clubs, civic groups, organizations, things that really had collections of recipes from the members that they all kind of contributed to it. And I feel like it just really brings back a time where cooking was such a central part to home life, especially in the pre-internet age. So do you have any of those types of cookbooks in your collection?
Oh, absolutely, I do. And, you know, cookbooks, these older cookbooks have so much more than beyond just the recipes. You know, from a family history standpoint, they are full of clues to actually our family history. So I've actually done genealogy. I've even written a blog post on that about how to use community cookbooks, church cookbooks, to actually research your genealogy, because they are just fabulous sources and have all kinds of information aside from usually some really good recipes.
We'll have to link to that in the show notes because that sounds like a really interesting article, especially if you happen to have any of these books hanging around in your house.
Oh, definitely. And we'll be talking about that a little bit as we go. And certainly, yes, I can show you some examples. And it's a lot of fun when you think about it.
Yeah, so I thought I have some to share. I know Lisa's got some to share, so we could just do a little back and forth of some fun cookbook history, little dip into the archives and see what we've got. So the first one that I, like the oldest one that I have, is called the Star Cookbook. And I did a blog post about this years ago. I'll link to that in the show notes. It was an interesting find. My aunt gave it to me. It was something that was passed down from aunts to nieces for three generations now. And it's a collection of recipes from a group of ladies called the Star Society, from the Grace M.E. Church in Pekin, Illinois. So this was the third edition print that I have, and you can see some photographs. It's gotten some love over the years. It is pretty worn. And this one was published in 1922, and then my great-grandma's sister got it from her aunt in 1924. Then she gave it to my aunt Janice, and then when my aunt saw me drooling over the old recipes, she decided to pass it down to me, which I think was awesome of her. And I love the way that the recipes are written, because it's really different from the way they're written now. And each of the sections kind of starts off with a little food or cooking or eating-related quote. And when I opened it up, the inscription says, "To Sue from Aunt Pink, August 1924. So that probably, I'm assuming her name was not Pink. I actually don't know.
I was going to say that sometimes Pink was actually used as a first name for some people at one point. And actually, I've heard it used for men as well. So just
interesting.
Throw that in there. Yeah.
Maybe I do need to dig into that a little and see who Aunt Pink was.
I can help you with that.
Yeah. So the book opens up with like a really lovely little poem, and it's got a great collection, all sorts of different types of recipes. I've made a couple of them over the years. There was one I had an epic fail. It just did not work. It was called like molasses fudge. But it measures things in ways that we don't measure things anymore. Like I want to say it was like a knuckle of something, like butter, you know, something that you wouldn't measure in a knuckle. Or, you know, whose knuckle are we talking about? Like, how big is that going to be? But there was one, I was looking for handwritten notes when I was looking through this to see, like, what would be the recipes to try. And there was one called Divinity. It was a candy. And it said, like, very good in pencil and, like, circled with a star. So I was like, well, definitely have to try that. And they're kind of like little meringue kind of kisses. And that one did turn out really well. So it's just interesting seeing which things were popular back then. And also in the back, there was a lot of kind of guidelines for housewives, like how to get a stain out of your husband's shirt or how to press your tablecloths or, you know, getting candle wax out of whatever. So it's just, it's an interesting kind of peek into that point in time and what types of things were important to pass down to the women in the family.
Yeah, definitely. It's, you do find not just the recipes, but they also would oftentimes have notes or written essays about various housekeeping, homemaking types of skills that could be, and tips that would be included as well. So let me ask you about the recipes in the book that you have. Mm-hmm. Do they actually tell you who the recipes are from? Does it give the name after each recipe?
I think in this cookbook, I don't have this one in front of me right at the moment, but I think this is the one where it would say like the name of the recipe, and then it would say from Mrs. And then it would say the husband's name and their last name. And I can't remember if it also, like, in parentheses maybe put the wife's name, but it definitely downplayed the role of the woman.
Right. So looking at it from a 2024 perspective, absolutely, it was kind of downplaying that. Looking at it from a family history, from a family historian type of viewpoint, yes, it gives the husband's name, the Mrs. So-and-so, but that also places her in a time and a place. So if Mrs. John Smith, maybe in parentheses Jenny, we know that she was living in that area at that time period. So it gives us a very specific time and place of where she's at, and also gives clues to her husband's name. If we have a husband's name and we know the wife's first name, we can go after that marriage record. So these are the types of clues that we can use as researchers when it comes to building out family trees. So that's actually something we can pull from when we're looking at these old community cookbooks. So
interesting.
So I was very excited to do this episode with you because I know that we're looking at it from different with different objectives in mind when we're looking at these older cookbooks. So I actually have a little gem of one called the Huntsville Heritage Cookbook. So I actually found this at a library sale. So this is not, I don't have family down in this area, but I thought it was a really great example of a community cookbook. And it was produced by the Grace Club Auxiliary, which is a service or civic community organization. These civic groups would create cookbooks to sell as part of a fundraiser to then be able to pay for some of their community services that they would offer. And the lovely thing about these is beyond the recipes, beyond knowing who wrote those recipes, puts them in time and place, is it tells us a little bit about the history of the group in the front of the cookbook. So oftentimes, whether it's a church-based cookbook, a faith-based cookbook, whether it's a community group, they will have a little write-up at the front, maybe the back, that tells a little bit about the group. And that gives you an idea, an insight into your family as to maybe what their political beliefs were, what their religious beliefs were, what their passion was, perhaps in the community. It speaks a little bit to personalities that we might not get otherwise. So I think that's a really interesting, that's one of the things that I really enjoy looking at when I have these cookbooks from areas that I research. It's a great way to understand the community a little bit better.
Well, and I think even outside of your own family, like I have one from one of my friends that I went to high school with. She sent me a copy and it's from a local over in Milwaukee, a local Croatian organization. So you're right. It does have a write-up in the front and that would be a good way to learn about more of their traditions too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Kind of similar to the Star Cookbook, but one that I know that my family in recent generations, including mine, actually cooks from a lot, is a book called Our Swiss Pantry. And this is it's a binder, but I was able to find a copy on Amazon at some point years ago. I know I have some Swiss heritage on that side of the family. I don't know how much of this is actually Swiss, but it's a collection of recipes, and it's got some really great little insights and tips. And this one was framed like each section has commandments. So like in the sweets section, there's a commandments for sweets and sours. So like use wooden spoons for stirring candy or jams as they have greater strength and do not scratch or discolor pans. Pickles are of no food value. It's an interesting commandment. Summer sunshine will be with you all winter with well-filled jelly glasses. So things like that I thought were really cute. They mixed some Bible verses in there. Like pleasant words are like honeycomb, sweetness to the soul and health to the body, Proverbs 16:24. And there's, you know, the bread section has bread commandments. But it has, in addition to the recipes, handy things like candy thermometer readings for sweets. And it gives you the whole list of, you know, what temperature to look for lukewarm, scalding milk, boiling, softball, all that kind of stuff. So helpful tips for that. And then I know a lot of the pie recipes that my aunts made when I was growing up originated from that book. And over the years, I've, you know, been making those and then my own versions of those. And I know I have a couple of those on my website. One is a rhubarb custard pie, and the granddaughter or great-granddaughter of the person who originally wrote it reached out to me. She was so thrilled to find it. And of course, I've like modernized the directions and stuff like that. And there's also a Dutch apple pie. I feel like, I don't know, old cookbooks and pies, you just really can't go wrong.
There are some very good pies and mm-hmm. very good recipes. Of course, I kind of skip over the one that was for lye soap in one of the ones I had.
They love to give you tips on soap.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Well, it was important, definitely. Yes. So it's interesting. So I have a church cookbook, and it's a Methodist cookbook. And one of the things I love when I can find these particular faith-based church cookbooks is the fact that, you know, the women's groups would create these, as I said, oftentimes as a fundraiser for the projects that they were working on. Well, from a family history standpoint, if you have researched a female line or the women in your family tree, it can get hard really fast because it didn't necessarily create a lot of records on their own. So when we're looking for women, we have to really think about what was their life like. They were not being quiet and demure somewhere off in the background, guys. They were living full-on, full-out lives, but they just were documented differently. And think about this. For women who were part of a church or part of a group, and they're creating a cookbook, are you going to be the only one who doesn't contribute a recipe to that cookbook? Because what are they going to say about you? Okay. They're going to say, oh, she doesn't, you know, she isn't into this, or she's not a very good cook. So she doesn't want to contribute a recipe. So, you know, it could look bad for you as far as your homemaking skills. And at that point in time, again, you know, from the time period, that was a big deal. So what I love about these is that it's almost like a mini directory of the women in the church or the women in this organization. And you oftentimes can find not just, you know, one woman, you can find other generations from the same family. It might be mother-daughter, mother-daughter, grandmother type of thing listed within the pages of these cookbooks. And so I find that really fascinating. And again, when you find your ancestor in a church cookbook, well, now you know what their faith is. You know what church they were part of. You can go after other records as well. So it's not fast research, but it's fascinating research.
I wonder if it ever became like a popularity contest too, like, oh, whose recipe gets listed first, you know, who kind of gets tucked toward the back. Like, I wonder if you could unravel any sort of family, inter-family drama or anything like that.
That's a really good question. I don't know that I've never thought about it that way. I can tell you that. I don't know if I could really tell. Oftentimes they're sorted, you know, by type, like appetizers at the beginning, beverages kind of thing. So within that, I don't really know. And I've never been part of one that was created. So I don't know the vetting process. If there was a vetting process, did they conveniently lose somebody's recipe they didn't like? I don't know. Wouldn't be surprised. So, but that's one of the reasons I love to get these cookbooks. Oftentimes, I might not make what's in them. There might be one or two that I would make, but I'm really looking at it from more of a social history type of standpoint.
Have you ever asked Grandma for one of her secret family recipes? We've all been there. You try to bake her signature dessert and it's a total flop. She swears she told you exactly what she does, a pinch of this and a dash of that and bake till done. But what does that really mean? With the Passing the Plate video, webinar, and ebook bundle, we'll help you record recipes in a way that's easy to repeat at home. learn to modernize favorite family recipes in a way that works for your lifestyle, and most importantly, preserve and share your culinary memories, recipes, and traditions with others. To learn more, head to passingtheplate.org/resources. Another type of cookbook that I have, when I got married, my cousin gave me one that she put together with recipes that like appetizers and desserts and dinners that she had made for her family a lot. And some were in the family, but just things that kind of, as especially as newly adult people trying to feed yourselves, just kind of index cards slid into almost like a photo album, but just that type of comfort knowing that it was recipes that my family actually in somewhat modern times had made. That was a fun one. And then the other personally, like most interesting, I feel like, family cookbook that I have, I had to order, it took me forever to find a copy of my own copy of this because this, the original my brother has, but it's a book called Persian Cuisine Book One, Traditional Foods by, and I'm not going to even attempt to pronounce the last name of the author, but my grandma, when she was visiting from Iran back when I was a kid, she brought that book. One side, when you open each spread, one side is in English and one side is in Farsi. So she was able to tell my stepmom which dishes are the ones to make. And she had made notes in, like with a pen or a pencil, on certain ones, like the directions in the cookbook for these traditional Persian meals would be, say whatever, but she would have the notes from what my grandma said, translated by my dad, and then she would write down, like, oh, she actually adds onion to this, or she doesn't do this step, or this is one of the favorites. So when I finally tracked down my own copy of this book, I had a Zoom session with my brother, because we don't live in the same state, and I made him, I wanted these notes. I don't know if my brother cooks from it that often, but I wanted these notes. So I had him go with page through page, page by page, through the entire book, and whenever there was something written, he would tell me what it says. If he couldn't decipher my stepmom's writing, I would look at it and I would copy exactly. Even if it didn't make sense, I wanted to know what the notes were so that when I go and try to cook those things, that I can. But it's really interesting too that it's got the two different languages. But yeah, there's some really great recipes in there.
It sounds like a fabulous book. And I love that the way you sat down with your brother to get the notes. I think that's definitely your dedication, and I would have done the exact same thing.
Oh yeah. And some of them I couldn't decipher the letters, so I just like mimicked how she wrote it, like forging mm-hmm. a signature, but forging the whatever it was. Because one day maybe I'll make sense of it, and it's so very different from the cookbooks I have from my mom's side of the family, you know.
Oh, sure.
Other side of the world, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, that kind of leads into another book that I wanted to kind of talk about when it comes to family recipe books. And that is one that you actually can create yourself. You know, a lot of families will do that at a family reunion, or I know a lot of family historians who will create the recipe book to preserve those family recipes, to pass them along to the next generation. And there are all kinds of ways to do it. And one of my friends did one for her German side of the family. Her name is Rhonda Roederer, and she created this wonderful family cookbook. And what I love is that she gave a history of the family and within its pages. And for each recipe, she said who she got it from. And then she also put in their family relationships. So, you know, whose daughter they were or whose great, great granddaughter they were. And I thought that was such a fabulous way of getting a perception or getting a perspective on family relations within that. It was such a fabulous way to get the information and put that family member in place on the family tree. And then she would also, if there were any stories behind it or how the recipe came into being as a family favorite, she also had notes on that as well. So it really reads as a family history as well as a recipe book.
That's awesome. And this kind of ties in, and we weren't planning to talk about this, but as you were describing that does kind of tie into a resource that we have. And we'll put a link in the show notes for, we have a digital download that you can also print out, or you can fill it out digitally for helping you collect recipes and the stories behind them from your family members or loved ones, whoever they are. And we have different prompts for you to ask to get a little more of that context behind the recipes. And this is a fun way to collect them. So if that's something that you're looking to do and you don't know how to start, we have you covered. So lastly, Lisa and I thought it would be fun to share a little more of a humorous side of old cookbooks. And I have one that was given to me as a joke gift from my mom years ago, but it's hilarious. It's called The Gallery of Regrettable Food, Highlights from Classic American Recipe Books. And like the front of the book says, Liberties Taken with Peas, Random Meats, Salty Salts. And the back has just this big warning, and it says, this is not a cookbook. You'll find no tongue-tempting treats within, unless, of course, you consider a boiled cow elbow with plaid sauce to be your idea of a tasty meal. No, the Gallery of Regrettable Food is a public service. Learn to identify these dishes. Learn to regard shivering liver molds with suspicion. Learn to heed the advice of stern fictional nutritionists. If you see any of these dishes, please alert the authorities. But basically, what's inside, these are actual photos and recipes that appeared for people to consume, like a lot of American stuff from the, I don't know, 40s, 50s, 60s, you'll know there's a lot of aspic, lots of molds.
Are there aspics in there?
Yeah, lots of just unphotogenic food, some of them in black and white. And if you do check this book out, it is very funny, but it's a good reason why black and white photography for food is just not appealing, especially given the context of some of these dishes. But there's some stuff from like advertisements, some, you know, from brands that were trying to sell you on whatever, if it was Jell-O or a certain brand of sauerkraut or whatever it was, these delicious dishes. But it's funny, and the commentary is quite colorful. So it's a funny one to kind of add to a retro cookbook kind of collection.
Oh, it sounds like a really fun one to look at. I'm actually going to try to find a copy of that one myself, because I think it would be so fun to do. But I've got one that I've been sitting here trying to remember where I got it. And I think it was probably just came to me from somebody, a family member's bookshelf when they were cleaning out or something. I really don't know. But it's called Being Dead is No Excuse, the Official Southern Lady's Guide to Hosting the Perfect Funeral. And it's by Gaydon Metcalf and Charlotte Hayes. And it is hysterical. The flyleaf is actually pretty funny, actually. So it says, in the deliciously entertaining slice of Southern life and death, inveterate hostess Gaydon Metcalf explains everything you need to know to host an authentic Southern funeral, such as, can you properly be buried without tomato aspic? Who prepares taste of your funeral fare, the Episcopal ladies or the Methodist ladies? And what does one do when a family member, and what does one do when a family gets three sheets to the wind and eats the entire feast the night before a funeral? So it's a lot of fun, but in each chapter, she's got this incredibly witty stories that she shares, but she also does share a lot of traditional classic Southern foods that you would often see show up at a funeral, but you would also see them show up at any church potluck, quite frankly. And they are very good recipes. Many of them, I think, are probably still in use today. Maybe not the aspic so much. I'm not so sure about that. But
so we'd anyway. Much rather cook from that cookbook than the one I just mentioned.
I think so, yes. All of these are actually special. In fact, there's a picture of deviled eggs on the front of it. So
yes.
These are very good recipes, so I will put that out there too. But it does have a lot of wit in it. What really intrigued me is how the food intertwines with the event or with the custom of a funeral. So I thought that was just a really interesting and kind of fun book, despite the topic there.
I feel like, you know, adding a little bit of levity and a sense of humor to a serious topic can make it more palatable. Pun kind of intended also. So well, that's fantastic.
And we talked about in one of our previous episodes about food as comfort food and providing comfort in times of stress and need. And mm-hmm. So this is just adding that next level to it.
Find the show notes and resources for everything we discussed in this episode at passingtheplate.org/18. That's a wrap on this episode of Passing the Plate. We hope you enjoyed our journey into the world of food, traditions, and the amazing connections they create.
It's been a pleasure sharing these stories and flavors with you. Remember, food is more than just sustenance. It's a way to connect with our past, present, and future.
So keep sharing your meals, keep passing those plates, and keep creating memories that will last a lifetime. Head to passingtheplate.org/podcast for show notes.